Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk some NFL football with the voice of America, CBS, TNT, Westwood One. He's brought to you by our friends at E. Edwards Workwear, eeworkwear.com. And I'll tell you what, today is a day that you could use it. Great cold weather gear for working outside, playing outside, like the great Carhartt coat that I wore to work today. You can find it, eeworkwear.com, any one of their four locations, E. Edwards Workwear, the man, the myth, the legend, Kevin Harlan with us on our Sprint guest line. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It is brisk today, isn't it? I'm glad you had that extra layer on you. That's good. I needed it, too. It was brisk.
It is. Brisk. It is a nice, but you know what? It felt good, even at 39 degrees. I don't know that the wind felt great. I don't know that I need this more than the day or so. We're going to get it before it warms up, but it was all right. I actually enjoyed it a little bit.
Not too bad. It means fall is here, doesn't it? Fall has officially arrived.
Probably. Yes. It means football weather, which we've got a big one. Actually, has become a very big one for the Chiefs. The Texans, by winning, you know, last week going into the week, everybody in the AFC South was 2-2. Well, two of them are 3-2. The Colts went through the Chiefs to get there. The Texans got to 3-2 as well. So they're only a game behind the Chiefs. This is a big game between the Chiefs and Texans for the Chiefs to stay out in front in the AFC West with the Raiders 3-2. By the way, Kevin was the one that said, watch out for the Raiders. I think they are turning the corner. And since you've said that, they have responded to you. But this is a big game in the NFL and a matchup of two marquee quarterbacks.
It is two young marquee quarterbacks, guys that have done it a little bit differently, but the kid down in Houston, Deshaun Watson, has grown so much from the kind of quarterback he was at Clemson to what he is now. They've done a really nice job of making him an NFL quarterback, and with his pocket presence and everything else. I mean, he's just been terrific, and he's got an elite receiver in Hopkins. There's no doubt that has furthered his learning. And this is a team that has won this division and been in the playoffs a lot lately. I mean, you really don't think about the Houston Texans that much, but they're always around. They're always solid. They're well coached by Bill O'Brien. But their quarterback, when he's healthy, they are playing well. And we know what they had on defense until Clowney was jettisoned off to Seattle. Watt may not be what he once was, but I think he's probably now seeing the entire offense tilted in his direction to kind of neutralize him a bit. Very strong team, but the quarterback is, as with every team, the success of these teams rests in the quarterback, and that's why the Texans are so good.
They are, and he, the one thing he doesn't do is avoid the sack. I'm curious, in all your conversations, you know, the analytics these days talk about, you know, at least Eric Eager and the guys at Pro Football Focus have done a lot of work on how a quarterback actually can help control the pass rush, that they have a lot of influence, if you will, on the pass rush. Deshaun Watson's been very sackable. They got Laremy Tunsil, who is supposed to be the answer at left tackle, yet he still gets sacked a lot. Is there just a sixth sense in some quarterbacks, the quote-unquote feeling, the pocket collapsing, feeling the pressure? Because Patrick Mahomes seems to have it. Deshaun Watson doesn't. He doesn't seem to know when to give up on the play and just throw it away.
Well, we knew he blew a knee a couple years ago, and he was sidelined. But that happened in practice. That wasn't in a game. That happened in practice. So he has been injured. He has been on the sideline and watched. I'm assuming they feel like, you know, he is better now than he once was in terms of you know, avoiding sacks and handling pressure and everything else. But he has been hit a lot. I would think this. I would think throughout the NFL, if you watched what happened to Andrew Luck before the end, the problem now with the Colts, as we saw ourselves, is they've invested all these high draft picks and all this money into their offensive line. And now it is an offensive line that can protect. But when Luck first came in the league, he was pounded. I mean, he was getting sacked all the time. The statistics don't lie. The numbers are right there. And his body just gave out. Ironically enough, a guy that was drafted number one, David Carr, who was the older brother of Derek Carr, David Carr was drafted by Houston. And he was sacked like over 50, 60 times a year. Just got pummeled. And I would think if any organization can appreciate protecting the quarterback, so that you can, you know, extend the life of these guys, it would be the Texans. But I guarantee it's the first thing on the lips of the offensive coordinator out at Arrowhead, and it's got to be the first thing on the lips of the guy down in Bill O'Brien, who basically is calling the plays, but it's got to be the first thing on the priority list every Wednesday when that team reconvenes after taking Tuesdays off is protect the quarterback without him. It's cutting off the head of the snake. So, yeah, no, he's been hit a lot. I agree. Now, he likes the moving pocket, different launch points. He's a guy that will move it and buy time for those receivers. Mahomes does the same thing, too. And Mahomes got hit in the pocket last week again with that ankle. Just protecting these quarterbacks is just the number one thing, and it cannot be stressed enough each and every week for teams like Kansas City and Houston, which rely so much on their quarterbacking.
Houston is really, you know, you think of them as being a defensive team because you think of J.J. Watt and Romeo Crennel,
but merciless and all these.
Yeah,
things. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But in reality, they're number 10 offensively, and defensively they're down. I'd have to count down 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18th in defense. How good is this team? Because Bill O'Brien, for whatever reason, whether it's justified or not, is always like third or fourth on the odds on the casinos of the first coach to be fired or the next coach to be fired. And yet, you know, I know the record's never 14-2 or 13-3, but he manages to drag his team into the playoffs on a regular basis, but nobody seems satisfied with what he's doing there in Houston. I mean, is he get not enough credit for what he's done?
Well, I don't know. I guess I just feel when you got Watt and you had Clowney, now, of course, like we said, he's gone, and you get Watts and you get Hopkins and you get some of these named players. Now you got Tunsil playing your left tackle. That you should be good all the time. You know, they had a changer a couple of years ago with the general manager who stepped aside because his wife was battling cancer. And the owner, Robert McNair, passed away. He died from cancer about 2-3 years ago. And so his son, Cal, now is the owner in that position. And O'Brien's voice in the football department has become a little bit stronger, probably because he's been around so long and he's coaching the guys. I don't know why he continually gets whacked in terms of criticism and why he's always talked about losing his job. I don't get it. I don't know if I can answer your question, to be quite honest. I know they've had the changes have all happened behind the scenes in the front office. Nothing really has happened, aside from what we've seen, and the coaching staff. It's basically been the same players out there, and but same success. And like I said, they're making the playoffs, and they're continuing to put in winning records. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. I don't know why. Because
no, I think that's the
love to have them.
Yeah, that's the perfect answer because that's kind of where the league is. Well, I don't know. 9-7-14, second place in the AFC South. 9-7, first in the South. 9-7, first in the South. 4-12. Oh my God, this guy didn't know what he's doing. 11-5, first in the South. But lose to the Colts in the playoffs. What the hell's wrong with you? And then now sitting at 3-2. I mean, he is the guy that he hasn't, become. Andy Reid is starting to be, listen, fans still have frustrations every time you lose. I mean, I think to a ridiculous extent. And Reid has faults. Everybody does. But he is the Chiefs coach. Nobody calls me and says they should fire Reid. They might call and complain about a decision, but nobody calls about him being fired, which is a unique, this from all your travels, is a unique situation in the NFL where nobody is asking for the coach to be fired. There's probably what? Boston, Kansas City, maybe Philly. Still has that kind of love. Maybe New Orleans, maybe Sean Payton's gotten back there in New Orleans with that kind of love. But where else, really, after about those coaches, John Harbaugh with the resurrection job he pulled last year, maybe he's back there in Baltimore. But I would say to anybody in Houston that's trying to get rid of Bill O'Brien, and trust me, I deal with the conference calls with Bill O'Brien. They're no gem. It's not like he's great for my gig. But I do think, like, when you're 44-40 in the NFL and didn't get your stud quarterback till 17 and then he blew out his knee, and so now you're 14-7 and your last 21, I don't think he gets quite enough credit. Is that fair? Or am I missing the boat.
No, you're very fair. And, you know, me put Pete Carroll up in Seattle and the two coaches
Good
in
point.
Los Angeles. And those guys are, you know, I think they're overachieving maybe with the Chargers. And the Rams are the hot thing right now. And everyone's plucking their assistant coaches to become their head coaches. The one thing I do hear from scouts and press boxes talking about these coaches, it goes to the McVay thing. And that O'Brien is not that. Bill O'Brien, you know, was from the Patriot organization. Then he went to Penn State as the head coach. Am I right? Was he the first coach after Paterno?
Yeah.
He the first? And so he had the cleanup, right, with all the Paterno stuff at Penn State, and literally kept that program buoyant. They recruited. They were successful. And then he handed off. And James Franklin is getting a lot of the benefit of what Bill O'Brien did in Pennsylvania. People don't talk about that enough, and what he did and what he weathered and how he handled it with great aplomb. And I'm sure he'll look back on his coaching career, and that'll be incredibly satisfying, because that university was sinking, because their football program was sinking with the face of the whole university, Joe Paterno, you know, just getting, as we know, in the aftermath, all the things that have happened. So, you know, he brings all that to Houston, and with the Patriot way and everything else, and they've done a great job. But here is the interesting topic that I've heard the last couple of weeks, which is beginning to resonate around the league. And these scouts, you know, man, they are not afraid to share opinions. But all these guys that have come from the Sean McVay tree, LaFleur up in Green Bay, and Zach Taylor over in Cincinnati, and other guys that have been elevated, you know, they're all not that sure. The thing that I think O'Brien does well, that they've talked about with these young first-year head coaches who have come from McVay, is the ability to adjust on the fly. And I've always thought that O'Brien was very good in that regard. I always thought that he was a good adjustment coach. I think Reed is a good adjustment coach. You can see him. Belichick is the standard for it. I think O'Brien has a lot of that in him. I think they adjust as the game moves on. And these young coaches, yeah, they come from the McVay tree, but they're not anything close to what he is in terms of in-game adjustments, which is hard sometimes for the press and for the public to view and understand and really, you know, siphon through their mind and figure out, well, what actually did they did? And sometimes it can be very slight and very subtle, and other times it can be very pronounced, whether you put extra personnel out there, you change what you're doing off, whatever it might be. And that's the one thing that O'Brien, who came from, you know, for many years as an assistant with Belichick, and that's what he does well. I think that has been one untalked about thing, and one thing that needs to be looked at more in this league. Adjustments that these coaches make in game, in stride. I think Reich does a good job of that, by the way, with the Colts. In fact, we saw a little bit of that in that Sunday game. I think he adjusts well on the move. To me, that's a lot of coaching. 50% is getting your team ready to go. Then 50%, the other side, is what you do when the game is not going to game plan. What do you do with your offense and your defense? How do you change in mid-stride, in midstream? Very difficult to do. The good ones always make the right adjustments, and you can see it Sunday to Sunday.
We're talking with Kevin Harlan here in the program. A little NFL football talk, as we will certainly be looking forward to what happens with the Texans and Chiefs. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other games. I'm curious, you got to call the Browns and Niners. Boy, the Browns are on a roller coaster, huh? I mean, they were down, and then, no, they're up, they're back, they're ready to go, and we were all fired up for a big showdown with the undefeated 49ers. And San Francisco just mopped up the field with them. So are you ready? Is this just going to be one of those? You know, I always think the team kind of surprises, and then they have big expectations, and they usually take one step back to then take two steps forward the following year. And being a guy who likes to make a bet in Vegas when I'm out there, I bet the Browns under. That's what I thought this year was going to be. They kind of surged last year, and now they'll be kind of that, oh, no, we're all good. And, of course, they went out and got a lot of different personalities, talented players, but big personalities to try to have to handle. So I expected a step back, and then next year they'll recognize how hard you got to play to be successful. So I'm not stunned that they got smacked around, but I am surprised at the fact that it was the 49ers that did the smacking around. They're good, right? At 4-0, they maybe had their step back last year, and now they're taking their two steps forward this year?
I love them. They're the most impressive team that I have seen in person this year, aside from New England. I've done two New England games, but they're the most impressive team I've seen. That was a big game going in. You remember the week before, Cleveland had beaten Baltimore in Baltimore 40-25. So they were riding high, and then they just were as flat as could be out in San Francisco. And now they got Seattle this week. I mean, they're on a short week as they get back to Cleveland at 6 a.m. Tuesday. So they're dealing with a lot. Here, what I just one person's thought on Cleveland, you hit on it, personalities. Big personalities, first-time head coach who has been a long-time assistant, and we have seen him on the podium after games. He's a little bit loose. And I just wonder if we see more not of what is or isn't available talent-wise, but what is or isn't there in terms of character, leadership, and all the intangibles that make good teams good teams. Because they're peaking and hitting valleys all the time. And to me, that would be disconcerting. You've got a young quarterback who has been very vocal and very much put right in front of us. And then you got Landry. And we know what he caused in New York. And as he's left, you know, there's been a lot in the wake of his departure from the Giants. And now you got this coach who is a little bit shoot from the hip himself, and I don't want to call it toxic, but I think they're revealing a lot about what they're all about, and the way that you saw their season may be right on. The expectations were too lofty for a team that's kind of being thrown together here and hoping it's going to work, and they got a lot going on. They are going to get Kareem Hunt, the running back, mid-season when he gets off suspension. That's going to help. Really, Chubb has been the best part of the running game. You know, Chiefs have seen it. So anyway, I just don't know where really to put Cleveland right now. But San Francisco did the great thing without Garoppolo last year when he blew the knee in Kansas City, is they told the other quarterbacks that they shoved in there, better than the others that were in and out of that starting position, we're not changing the offense for what you do well. It's going to be a Garoppolo run offense. You're going to have to adjust because we got all these other parts that are great. All these nice skill players at receiver, the tight end is elite. They got three undrafted running backs. They all contribute. They have stuck with their game plan. They have not deviated when Garoppolo went out. So now that he's back in his first year after the ACL, I mean, they just kind of picked up. Now, the first big challenge was Cleveland handled them well. They got the Rams this weekend. Here's the problem is their two tackles are second and third string guys. They've lost their two starting tackles. So Kyle Shanahan, who I do think is very smart from that, actually it's the McVay-Shanahan tree. It's not just the McVay tree. It's the McVay-Shanahan tree when both were together with the Redskins. They've adjusted well. And I do think that Lynch has done a nice job drafting, signing guys off the street. I do think the Niners are for real, but they're really beat up. I mean, they're really, really beat up. I don't know what they're going to be able to do against that very difficult Rams defensive line. But I do like them. The record is right, and that division is rugged, man. Seattle with one loss. Rams have two, and they just barely lost that Thursday night game up in Seattle. And you got undefeated San Francisco. So that is a hell of a division.
It, by the way, it's a hell of a week of football. Eagles-Vikings is a great game that we're going to see play out. Texans-Chiefs, I think, is a really big, important game for what things are going to be in the NFL. You mentioned the Niners and Rams is a really big game. There's turds out there as well. Don't get me wrong. There always is in the league. But I think there's some really, really good games. And what honestly could be better than Skins-Dolphins? I mean, we're going to settle the number one pick right now. How great is that?
Well, you got a brand new coach now, interim basis, and you got an organization which is just taking shots from every which way. And Miami, I think they've all kind of come to realize, you know, they're building, they're starting from scratch, and they're going to find out about Rosen because they named him the starter, and they're going to find out if he is what they think he was when they scouted him. They have a first-time head coach in Brian Flores, and they're being very upfront about what they've got. They're stockpiling picks. They're gonna change the narrative. So at least they've got, and I think fans are okay. If they're not okay with it, they understand it. They are going to start from scratch. But the Redskins have paid big money for certain players. And here's the sad thing about them. When they had Alex Smith, they were, I think, 6-2 when he broke his leg. I think they were 6-2. And since that time, what are they, like 4-11 or some 3-12 or some, like just like unviewable record. And they have played horrible football. I think Haskins, I don't know where they think that he, I think he was a program quarterback at Ohio State. He had always the best elite talent and speed around him. You and I could have quarterbacked that team. Nothing against him, but boy, they sure reached, I think, that pick. Although I think people thought that he should have been drafted higher than he was. I think he was drafted too high. And now that they've got that going on with Case Keenum.
Oh, yeah.
They've got a lot of problems with the Redskins. In Miami, they've got direction and a compass. And I think people, that's the only difference here. So they're going to get a great pick. They're going to get multiple picks when they traded Fitzpatrick to Pittsburgh. So they're in good shape.
And Tunsil, they've got 110. Well, I saw a projection of like they played the season out 10,000 times, and so how should the draft fall? And it came up that them with number one, although I actually think they're going to beat the Redskins this week, them with number one, they get 10 from the Steelers, and then they get 27 from the Texans. This thing really liked the Texans to go on and have some success. So, I mean, they're going to have 3 first-round picks and be in a position like the Raiders to try to turn things around. The difference is I do think Tua Tagovailoa is a franchise quarterback, so if they can add the franchise quarterback in addition to 2 more first-round picks, then I think the Dolphins are doing the right thing. Short-term pain for long-term gain. I preach that all the time to my children. You know, like, I know, it sucks. Take the trash out. But when you're 25 and you don't live in a sty because you're used to taking the trash out, you're going to thank your father. I'll be dead from a heart attack for 10 years by then. But trust me, you will thank your father that I made you take the trash out.
Yeah, a lot of lessons to be learned there.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yes, and I think a perfect scenario when talking Redskins and Dolphins to relay it to taking trash out, because that's what they are right now. They're trash. But I think the Dolphins have a bright future. Two teams that are good, and we saw the Lions give the Chiefs everything that they could handle. You're going to get the call on Monday Night Football, which, of course, you hear right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You're home of the National Football League, where you hear the great broadcaster Kevin Harlan on. Lions plus 4 at the Packers. I love this game. And we got some dogs coming up on Monday Night Football. Kevin, I hope you take that week off, whenever it is. I think I saw some turds that are down the road. This is not one of them, though. This is a tremendous game. And the Packers, really, you know, you ask a lot of people, they'll say, maybe 6 of the top 8 are in the NFC. Some people 7 of 9. I know Baltimore, a lot of people, you know, they had a bad loss. But I know Baltimore, a lot of people think it could be pretty good. Maybe Houston, if they beat the Chiefs, we're going to look at them differently. We'll really knock the Chiefs down. But it's kind of like Chiefs and Pats and some meh, because nobody's buying the Bills at 4-1 yet. But the NFC, a lot of people will tell you, have a lot of the strength next. New Orleans is a popular choice to maybe even be the best team in the league when they get Drew Brees back. Everyone still loves Philly. Dallas has been strong. I know they lost again, but they still look like a pretty strong team. But the Packers never get talked about as maybe being the best team in the NFC, even though they're one of the three teams with 1 loss or less. I guess the Lions are too, technically. They've got a tie also. But, you know, what are we looking at? I was kind of surprised the Packers weren't a bigger favorite in this game. They're only a 4-point favorite at home against the Lions. Does that surprise you?
Well, Devontae Adams is out, and he's a top receiver, and one of the top 5 probably in the NFC for sure, maybe NFL, and he's out with a significant toe injury, they say. So now, again, it's like last year. Rodgers has got to deal with young receivers, and they're learning a new system along with Rodgers from their new coach. So I guess so. You know, they look. Rodgers has looked better, I think, every week. He was pretty good against Philadelphia. He really kept him in the game against the Eagles on that Thursday night game. He was masterful against Dallas this past weekend down in Texas. And they're playing a Detroit team, which is probably not getting it. They're a little bit off the radar. And I think the Chiefs saw that they got, in fact, Detroit turned it over twice inside the 5 or inside the 10. And we know about the fumble that was returned the other way. The Chiefs were lucky to come out of there with the win, as we all know. So Detroit is good. And I like them. And I think they come in fearless because no one's talking about them. So I think they're, I bet number probably doesn't surprise me that much. But I do think that Adams being out changes Green Bay's offense a little bit. They can run the ball better than they ever have. in the last like 3 or 4 years. And that with Aaron Jones has been one of the big things that they have really relied on. Their defense is better. I would be surprised if Green Bay lost this game. But Detroit, as we saw, like you said, they are much better. They're a stiffer team, a good, solid team with some weapons and some playmakers on defense. They'll give the Packers all they can handle, and I expect a very good game on Monday night up at Lambeau.
Yeah, I do too. And I think we got a great Monday nighter, so I'm looking forward to it. Of course, always looking forward to your call. Kevin Harlan with us on our Sprint guest line. The time always flies when we're talking to Kevin Harlan. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. You know, Harlan, I'd just keep going on for hours and hours with you if I could. You're always so happy and kind to me, but I know you have to hang up the phone and be like, would this fat moron stop babbling with me? Because I would talk to you for like 4 hours. All right. It's brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute and the laughter of Kevin Harlan, the only hospital dedicated exclusively to orthopedics, even in ortho urgent care. Open 7 days a week, treating things like high school football injuries and the big guy, Curtis Siebold's knee. You can find out more at kcoi.com or by calling 913-319-7633. Kevin, I begin you with this. Your favorite airport is what?
Favorite airport? Well, I like, I guess I like O'Hare. When people hate O'Hare, they either like it or hate it. I like it for a variety of reasons, but I'll go through Chicago when I get a chance. Okay. There are a lot of good ones. Though, hey, wait till you see this one here. Like I've mentioned before, this is going to be terrific.
Okay.
It's going to be terrific.
We know you see all the airports, so we always like to get your check on it. All right. Best stadium view to call a game. Which stadium, whether it's a radio booth, TV booth, whether you're there for CBS or Westwood One, who right now has the best view for you to watch call a game? Because I know some of them are starting to throw you down in the end zones or the corners. And who's got
for
the
radio,
best?
For radio, yeah, for radio, they're bad. We have a ton of – the worst is Washington because you're in back of the end zone. And the second worst is Miami because you're not even – you're in the end zone and you're on the other side of the field and not even able to look at a monitor that shows the what the TV audience is seeing. So they're seeing one angle and you're seeing the reverse. And that it's horrible. I would say Arrowhead, and I would say the Meadowlands. Those are two pretty good ones. Baltimore and Nashville are too low for me. And you're more, they're too low. Arrowhead is about perfect. You're up a little bit higher, but close enough. And thank God they didn't touch that booth. And New York is very good as well.
Okay. Your most common pregame meal before calling a game is what?
On basketball days, I like to eat at 1 and eat everything I can find. And for an NFL game, I will get like a little bowl of cereal at the truck that they have for our crew and just try to have a quick bowl of cereal and really not eat until I get to the airport and fly to my Monday night game on Sunday night. So I don't eat much before a game in the NFL on morning, on afternoon games. And then 1 o'clock on Monday night games.
Ah, interesting. All right, because God knows there's nothing but cost, efficiency, and nutrition at the airport. So good to know that that's where you're making that happen. I had to change planes in Phoenix once and buy food for the family to take a long trip over there. $142 later, we had lunch. It was unbelievable. Wow. I hope that's on the company teat, if you will.
We try Kevin. To make it that way.
Yes, yes. All right, and finally, one game to win. Who you going with, Mahomes or Brady, right now? One game to win. Who's your starting quarterback?
I hate to say it, but Brady. I'm worried about Mahomes' ankle and his mobility. I know he says it was better, surprisingly good, when he talked on Wednesday. But I don't know how you can turn your back on New England.
With an answer like that, when you're done being the king of broadcasting, you can run for office. You just made both fan bases happy. Got to go with Brady. Mahomes' ankle. So Chiefs fans are like, oh, but if he was healthy, Kevin would take Mahomes. So I like
it'd
that.
It'd be tough to say no to Mahomes. But Brady's done so much. I think until Mahomes is in that position himself, I think it's Brady.
Yeah, no, I got no problem. I will not argue with that. You want to be the man, you got to beat the man, as Ric Flair, the great philosopher, once told us, and that has not occurred yet. So, Kevin, you're the man. We always appreciate the time, buddy. Safe travels. We'll talk to you next week.
Great, Trent. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. When he retired, Steve Young was number one all-time in career passer rating. Where is he now? Minimum 1,500 attempts.
One more time. Give it to me.
Steve Young, when he retired, it's his birthday today. When he retired, he was number one all-time in career passer rating. Where is he now? Where is he ranked now? Minimum of 1,500 attempts.
10.
7.
Who are the six that have moved in front of him? Because he was like Mr. Accuracy. He was like Mr. Passer rating his whole career. Who was in front of him?
Number one, Aaron Rodgers. And down that list, 2, Russell Wilson. 3, Drew Brees. 4, Tom Brady. 5, Tony Romo. And 6, who just moved ahead of him because he crossed over the 150-100 threshold earlier this year, Dak Prescott.
Wow.
Dak Prescott now with 1,600.
So the list again that are above him? 1 is?
Rodgers.
2.
Wilson.
3.
Brees.
4.
Brady. Romo. Prescott.
Romo and Prescott are the ones that don't sound like the others.
Mm-mm.
Tony Romo's not going to be a Hall of Famer, is he?
No.
I don't think he is.
Rest of the top 10, Peyton Manning, Philip Rivers, Kirk Cousins.
Wow.
You would not have thought. The fact that Kirk Cousins has a higher passer rating than Joe Montana and Kurt Warner should tell you something about
how the game has changed.
How the game has changed.
It is quite different. Quite different, to say the least. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Yep.
Well, and then that's why every quarterback is going to rewrite the passing numbers.
Yeah.
It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we are playing for. It's certainly a great day to get to Joe's. Great opportunity for you to get that smoker or grill you've always been looking for. To get out to the tailgate, the Kansas City Barbecue Store has all the ideas, expertise, products to make your tailgate the absolute best. Whether you're looking to load up the smoker or light up the grill at your house, Kansas City Barbecue Store, place to go for all your barbecuing, smoking, grilling needs, rubs, sauces, fuel, accessories, even buy your meat by visiting them in Olathe off 119th and Strangline Road, online at thekansascitybbqstore.com.
Want to hear something funny from today?
Well, I will tell you that I know that because I was out at Family Leisure the other day,
mm-hmm.
and because of the storms, the classic car show,
yeah.
not in effect, it's in effect today.
Nice.
So if you're looking for a great place to go and have a great time, head over to our man Dennis's place, Family Leisure, K10 and Ridgeview. Beautiful cars, great cars.
Been out there.
And, of course, beautiful inside as well. Check out the pool tables, shuffleboard, the Gorilla basketball goals. You know, mm-hmm. we're not far from Christmas. It'll be a great time. And, of course, closing out all the patio furniture as well. It is a great time to get to Family Leisure and enjoy that car show. Yes, tell me something, Curtis.
Zach Greinke met the media today ahead of his Game 1 start for the Houston Astros tomorrow against the Yankees. The entire press conference lasted
Are usually long, right? Like 15, 20 minutes of questions?
The entire press conference lasted less than 2 minutes. Would you like to hear it?
I would. Let's hear all of Greinke's thoughts about pitching in the American League Championship Series.
Zach, how much, if at all, do you think the long layoff affected you in the ALDS?
I don't know. Next question. Mark, down the front.
Zach, could you share with us what it means to be the starter in Game 1 of the ALCS?
I don't know. Just got to get ready to pitch. Next question. Here in the middle.
Zach, when you joined this team with the trade, there was a lot of talk that this was going to be World Series favorites, October, the playoffs. What's it like to watch this get to this point that you're in the ALCS knowing you're this close to the World Series with this team?
A lot of good players, good baseball being played. Dan, over there on the left.
Zach, when you look at the Yankee lineup, what challenges do they present, and how much of a task is that going to be for you?
A lot of good hitters, so it's tougher to get good hitters out than not as good hitters.
Okay.
Go back here, middle.
Zach, what, if anything, can you take away from your first two starts against the Yankees this year when you were with the Diamondbacks?
Not much. Their whole team was hurt both times I faced them, pretty much.
Can we take one more down here on the left?
If anything that you could share with us when growing up, dreaming to become a ball player and expecting for the best in your career, how do you feel in a personal level about being so close to reaching the ultimate dream of any ball player to become, to be in a World Series?
Yeah, it'll be good if it happens. Got some games to go still.
Zach, thank you.
1 minute, 51 seconds.
Wow. Getting the Yankees out.
The good hitters are tougher to get out than not so good hitters, or not as good of hitters. True. You know, he doesn't like
the spotlight. He's gone further.
Yeah. But, you know, if he goes out and throws seven innings of two-hit shutout ball like he did in his seventh postseason start, or two runs over eight with one walk and 10 Ks as he did in his fifth postseason start, Zach's just a colorful guy. But if he goes out and throws what's on an average 6.23 ERA in his last five postseason starts, if he goes out there and stinks it up tomorrow, I mean, he's not a colorful guy. I mean, it's you know, so I'm saying, you can do that and get away with it if you go out and throw zeros.
There was no reason for if Zach were more like everybody else,
right?
He would not have been traded by the Arizona Diamondbacks. They signed him to be an ace, and he's done nothing but pitch like being an ace. Mm-hmm. Yet they unloaded him. And you can't tell, well, the contract. And I kept hearing this, like, well, the contract's so big. I know, they signed it. Like, it's not like it was like something they unwrapped Christmas morning. Ooh, wow, look how big this contract is.
Yes.
I had no idea. No, you signed it. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Well, I mean, I do get it, actually. I get it in the sense that they didn't really understand how different Zach Greinke is.
Yeah. It's I mean, the Kershaw thing is just weird because, I mean, he didn't have a personality that you would think would falter under the lights. But, I mean, Greinke, you can kind of see point A to point B. He's never a person who's liked any type of fanfare, which is, I mean, he did pick an odd
profession
to do that. He's kind of, it is what he is now, but.
Well, we know he walked away from the game at one point. I mean,
we know he's he hates the Trop. Okay, that's what happened in a start against Tampa Bay. But pitching at home should go well tomorrow night, right?
Right. That's what we would think, except for it is the Yankees.
Right.
And you can pitch well and give up four on three solo on you know, two solo homers and a double with a couple of guys on. I mean, that's the thing that could happen there. I do think it's interesting. We were talking to Adam Wexler. All the Astros owe him is $64 million over the next 2 years.
Wow.
That's why I don't think they'll have Gerrit Cole. They got Greinke thinking, we can't put that number together. It's just Greinke for two more years. Let's go get Greinke. We'll walk on Gerrit Cole and take the draft pick compensation. Try to win a World Series with three aces.
Yep.
But then take Gerrit Cole with the draft pick compensation. Yep, Zach being Zach. 205 career wins on his way towards 300, as we know, Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
A 3.35 career ERA. Postseason, the numbers become a 3-5 with a 4.58. Better hitters, too. You don't get to face the Sunday getaway lineup.
No.
You don't get to face the backup guys, and you don't get to face the team down at the bottom of the standings.
Nope.
Nothing but the big boys. So your playoff numbers should be worse. His are.
Yeah.
We'll see what he brings in this game. We will take a break, come back, give you some things you need to know next here in the program. All right, let's start with a little baseball. Nationals closer Daniel Hudson placed on the paternity list prior. I haven't even gotten to the coronas yet. Wait till you hear me later. Prior to the game one. Cardinals are going to play the Nationals tonight. He ain't going to be there. That's what I'm getting to.
Wife had a baby this morning.
Jeff Passan was there. He's writing a story about being there, about how he's jetting from A to B and back. So we'll talk. That's why we didn't have Passan this week, is because he was covering that.
He's awesome. He's as connected as he's ever been.
K-State landed a big man for the 2020 class. Davion Bradford, 7'2", 250. from Melville High School in St. Louis has signed on. Chiefs injury report, Eric Fisher, Chris Jones, Dorian O'Daniel, they're out. Sammy Watkins and Andrew Wiley, doubtful. Tyreek Hill, new designation, according to Andy Reid. He's good.
Good.
We don't know what that will mean when it's all said and done. Mason Rudolph ain't going to play Sunday night for the Steelers against the Chargers. Devlin Hodges making his first career start.
Undrafted rookie from Samford.
Oh, that's who I'd put my money on.
Yeah.
Alvin Kamara missed practice today with an ankle injury. He's listed as questionable Sunday against the Jags. So keep an eye on that for you fantasy football nerds. And tomorrow's the 30th anniversary of the Herschel Walker trade. Walker went from the Cowboys to the Vikings, a three-way deal that also involved the Chargers. Altogether, 18 players and picks. It ruined the Vikings and launched the Dallas Cowboys. That was maybe the biggest trade in the history of the National Football League. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you next week.